Simply Focus mit Elva Czerny and Dominic Gilda for Live and Joyandy.
Hi, and welcome to this new episode. Please welcome your hosts, Elfie Czerny and Dominic Godin.
Welcome back, everyone. We are here in Denver with Terry Pichot today. Hello, Terry.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor.
Thank you very much for your invitation to have us here with you in your beautiful facilities where you host your trainings and do your sessions working with all kinds of different people. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's an honor to meet you and have you here.
It's so great for us to be here because we have so many stories and everybody we met said, have you met Terry Pichot yet? They all talked about the summer intensive and they talked about the trainings that they attended and how important you are and were for their work. So we really enjoy being here at the Denver Center for Solution Focused Brief Therapy.
So Terry, you're a solution focused facilitator. That was the word we just came up with in our conversation before. Doing work with all kind of different people in all kind of different fields. You're also an author of many books and we're very happy to talk about that with you today.
Well, thank you. I do a lot of things. It's hard to find a word that I would describe myself. I mean, I was originally trained as a therapist, so that was my original origin of a solution-focused brief therapist. However, I quickly learned when I was running an agency that it was hard to find really good solution-focused brief therapist to do the kind of work I was doing, so I ended up training my own therapist, and then I loved training, so I became a trainer, and then I started working with agencies and then became a consultant and all kinds of things. I love working with people. So I would typically describe myself as an expert at helping people work with difficult people.
And you're not alone. In your office, there is another office, dog office.
There is. I have my partner, Tasman, who is a border collie, who is a wonderful solution-focused brief therapist.
We're so much looking forward to talk more about this. So, Terry, you've been with Solution Focus for many, many, many years. What fascinates you about Solution Focus?
I love the fact that the clients are the experts on themselves, and I have no idea what is best for them. And I get to hone my expertise in being an expert at asking good questions and about the process. And I see it as these two kinds of expertise coming together. And with those two kinds of expertise, people think differently. I learn, they learn. We both come away very different. Mm. And I love that.
Oh, yes. So when you learned about solution focus for the first time, what fascinated you back then?
You know, it was a complete relief. I was trained as a drug and alcohol counselor in the 80s, and in that time, drug and alcohol counselors were seen as being the expert, and if the client disagreed with our expert advice, they were seen as being in denial or resistant, and it always bothered me because I wasn't so convinced I was giving good advice. I didn't think I had good information, and I felt like a phony or a fraud. And so when I ran into this model and learned that they do know what's best for themselves, I don't know if they need to stop using altogether or use socially. I have no idea. And in the end, clients are going to do what clients are going to do. So I loved the fact, let's find out what clients are going to do and then tie that to what they ultimately want for their life. And it worked so much better.
Hmm. So how did your work change as a result of getting to know solution focus?
I could be more honest. You know, I never viewed myself as dishonest, but I had to be this professional and act in certain ways that felt so fake. And so in this model, I learned I could be very genuine. And if they said, what do you think? I could say, I don't know. I have no idea, but I'm very good at asking good questions to help us figure this out. And that partnership was so much of a relief. And it's something I love. And, you know, one of the struggles that I have just as a person is I hate assumptions. I hate it when people think they know something about me, and I hate having to pretend I know something about you. And solution focus completely removes that. And it reminds me that I know nothing about who you are as a human being. Studying that culture, studying that developmental phase tells me nothing about you. I have to learn your culture. I have to learn your gender, who you are, your values from you. And it's the ultimate about that genuineness and not assuming.
Wow. And we talked about the work you do with your therapy doc. Mm-hmm. And also Bibiana walked around your office and you had toys there and we played together. And there was this stuffed animal dog that she took. And you said how you observe her and how this influences the work you do afterwards with your therapy dog. Mm-hmm. So one thing is asking questions to get to know people, and the other thing is just to observe and see. So what do you observe and how do you use your observations for your work?
Mm-hmm. Well, the biggest way I use the observations, especially with that little stuffed dog, is that my job using a therapy dog, my number one loyalty is to protect my therapy dog. Because if my dog does not feel safe, he has to defend himself and then he becomes a danger. And so when I work with clients, sometimes they're referred by child welfare, things like that. And sometimes the clients have been abused and they act out how they were treated. And so when I'm working with a young child, I want to first see how do they think about a dog? Is it something to swing around by its tail? Is it something to poke its eyes? Or is it something to hug and cuddle? Mm. And so I want to make sure I get a sense of how they instinctually respond to something that looks like a dog before I decide, do I introduce them to a real dog? Because that's very important that I protect the dog. So I have to create safety. And typically, our number one responsibility is to the safety of our client. Mm. But when you use a therapy dog, my number one responsibility is first to my own dog. Mm. And that's how I create safety for the child.
Mm. So, and when you decide to bring your dog, how does that work? What do you observe? How does your brilliant dog assist you in your work as a therapist?
Well, my dog is just a wonderful dog that is very well trained. And him being in the room, like the research shows when an animal is in the room and people like animals, their blood pressure goes down, their heart rate goes down, they smile more, they have less anxiety. So just by having the dog in the room, he's creating exceptions. Mm. And as we all know in solution-focused practice, exceptions are the heart of things. So I can have a client who wants to meet a dog and have them sitting in the waiting room and they maybe have all the posture of someone who's depressed. And then I go in the other room and bring in my therapy dog and all of a sudden they smile and they have eye contact and they take initiative. And they say kind words to the dog. And then I can get curious and see a different side of them. I see them as a compassionate person, someone who is loving and kind, where otherwise I may just see them as someone who's withdrawn.
Well, listening to you makes it feel the most normal thing to do, therapy like that. And still, I feel there was a time when you decided to bring your dog. And I'm very curious about the story of how you came up with the idea to use your dog as a solution-focused therapy assistant?
Mm-hmm. There was a very specific moment, and this was with my original therapy dog, Rockefeller, who was a rough coat collie, looked just like Lassie, beautiful dog. And I was training him because I wanted to do therapy dog work, but as a volunteer, to take him into hospitals and things like that. Never occurred to me to use him in my own work. And so I took him to Home Depot, and I was just working with him. My husband loves power tools. So I would take him to Home Depot when my husband went shopping, and my husband would be there for hours at Home Depot. And I thought, this is perfect. I can take my dog and it will be around like carts and lumber being thrown and, you know, big carts that make weird noises when they back up. It'll be wonderful training. And so I had my dog in a sit stay while my husband was looking at power tools. And I see this woman and she had, it felt like 18 kids. I'm sure it was four, but she had all of these children. They're running everywhere. And this poor woman looked so exhausted. And she was whispers to me, if only I could get my children to be as well behaved as your dog. And so she engaged with me and I said to her, oh, my dog would be running around just like your children if I didn't put so much work into it, because he's so curious. He would love to run around and he'd probably eat things and pee on things, but I have to watch him very closely. And I said, would you like to see him do some tricks? Would your children like that? And she said, oh, yes, they would love it. And I said, well, I need him to stay focused. So if it's okay, I need to have your children sit very quietly. So there were some bags of like mulch and manure and things in the garden center. And I said, if we can have your children sit very quietly on these bags, then I'm sure I can get my dog to do some tricks and make them smile. And so she gathered her children and sat them all on the mulch bags. And they were so quiet and so well behaved. And they all clapped as Rockefeller bowed and high-fived and rolled over. And at the end, she said, thank you very much. I've never seen my children act so well behaved. And I said, I've never met them and I never would have guessed they were anything but well behaved. And she went off on her way. And then after that, I thought, oh my goodness, if I could get my clients to bring their children to me and to have these wonderful parenting conversations like I just did with a stranger in Home Depot, my job would be so much easier. So I decided, forget volunteering. I'm bringing my dog to work. So I put together a proposal for my supervisor and the medical director. And I was really sure it was going to be declined. But I used a method that I learned from my mother. My mother always said, if you have to have an answer now, the answer will be no. And I learned to try to predict all the reasons my mother would tell me no. And so I made a list of all the reasons the medical director would say no, we cannot have a therapy dog in public health. And then I set off to research the facts about every one of those. And so when I did my presentation to the Board of Health, I presented with, oh, we probably shouldn't have a dog in public health because of the liability. But here's the things I found about liability and how we could protect ourselves. And oh, we shouldn't have a dog in public health because allergies. But here's some information I found about how we can control allergies. And I did my whole presentation this way. And then I looked at them at the end and I'm like, I still would really like to do that. And they said to me, well, I can't think of any reason to say no.
This is amazing. I love this story and this kind of preparation.
My mother taught me well.
Yeah.
Wow. So you brought in your therapy dog from there on and ever since worked with therapy dogs.
Yes. When I was at public health, since it was a regular job and I was the supervisor, I could bring my therapy dog 2 days a week because therapy dogs should never be worked more than one day in a row because they are being drafted. They're not really volunteering and dogs sleep a lot. And when they are at work, they're constantly on duty. So he would work a whole shift with me in my office, and then he would go home and sleep, and then he would come back a day or so later. And then when I had a second therapy dog, they could trade off, and each dog had their specialties that they could do. It was very fun.
Oh yeah, I believe. So how did bringing your dog change or influence your work?
You know, he made my job so much easier. You know, so many funny stories. There was a head of, I don't remember her title, but the person who did all the contracts and all the financial kinds of stuff. And I oftentimes relied on her to get back with me as I ran my program. And she wasn't always the best at getting back with me. And when I started having a therapy dog, whenever she was in the building, she would stop by to visit with a therapy dog. And so she would come in and she would visit with the dog. And at the end, I would say, oh, by the way, since you're here, can I talk with you about my contract? And she would talk to me and I would say, you know, I just don't want to bother you. She's like, I really didn't want to deal with it. But now that I'm here visiting with Rockefeller, sure. You know, so, I mean, he got people to come to me. And with my staff being the supervisor, when the staff would be stressed out dealing with a difficult client interaction, I mean, of course, they knew they could always talk to me. But sometimes they would worry that I was so busy that they didn't want to stop by. But they learned quickly that they could stop by and just play with the dog. And that way they didn't have to interrupt me, but the dog was in my office. So they would stop by and get out the ball and play with the dog a little bit. And as they're sitting on the floor playing with the dog, then I could casually say, and how are you doing? And so then we could talk about client cases, but it didn't have to be this formal kind of, we need to staff a case. And it would give them the support they needed.
Wow, that's so great. And all your examples that you just mentioned, it's always this different behavior around dogs and using that as an exception or highlighting that. And this very well goes with this way of looking at people and solution-focused approach, not them being like this or kind of labeling their behavior, but seeing all the possibilities, all their behavior in different situations. So we're not like this, but we have many, many, many different shades of ways of how to behave, and then when you see it, then use that to really highlight and also explore more how this became possible in this moment.
Terry, I guess having a dog around also might change the environment. So how does that change? What difference does that make?
Yeah, I just find that when there's a dog or a child around, people become more genuine. And the literature refers to dogs as a social lubricant. You know, think about how weird it would be to approach a stranger going for a walk and just start having casual conversations. And yet, when a person is walking a dog, it makes perfect sense, yes, right? To just stop and say, oh, what a gorgeous dog. I love Aussies.
Yeah.
It makes all the sense in the world. Versus if a person's just walking down the street, I'm like, oh, geez, I love black shirts. That's just a beautiful shirt. They'd be like, what's wrong with you? Right? But a dog makes it so that you can become yourself, so that you can sit on the floor. Like, one of the things that I notice is when the therapy dog is around, people naturally just sit on the floor. People naturally take the cues from those around them rather than to be so into their own issues and their own stressors, which is how we oftentimes can be. And the same thing is true of a child. We just naturally just sit on the floor and start interacting with toys and things like that. That's our heart, right? You know, when a dog is around, you can see who loves dogs. And you can also see who doesn't like dogs, and then out of a sign of respect, you keep walking. And that's why when you use a therapy dog, they should always be on leash until people are screened, just because it should never be intrusive.
And I guess sometimes you even get people loving a dog who didn't before.
Yes. A lot of people have fears of dogs. And so I have a book of pictures of my dog. And oftentimes people would say, oh, I'm afraid of dogs. I don't want the dog here. I'm like, okay. Would you like to see a picture to see if he's a scary kind of dog? And oftentimes they would say yes. And so I'd open the book. They're like, oh, who could be afraid of that dog? It looks like Lassie. And they're like, no, I want to meet him. And it's a wonderful way to do that. I mean, typically we don't use animal-assisted therapy to work with phobias. We wouldn't use that as a technique. But if they like dogs, it's a wonderful thing.
We talked about how your dog is assisting you, and what I know from animals, they're amazing teachers as well. So what did your dogs teach you about solution focus?
The spontaneity, how to go with whatever is in the room, not have a plan. You know, one of my favorite things to do with my current therapy dog, Tasman, he's a border collie and he is very high energy. And I don't see near as many clients as I used to. And I travel a lot. And so my favorite thing to do with my current therapy dog is he co-teaches the animal assisted therapy class. And so he's the demo dog and he demos things correctly and he demos things very incorrectly. Which is wonderful for teaching therapists how to use a therapy dog. So one of the first things he did with one of my classes is he came in and he was so excited and he had greeted everyone. So I took him off leash so he could meet everybody. And he got so excited and he ran into his office and he got one of his favorite toys. And then he ran full speed laps around the entire class with this big smile on his face and just looked at everybody as he's running full speed. And the atmosphere in the room was just amazing as people just laughed and they smiled. And then I called him to me and I said, okay, so what did we just learn about how a dog changes everyone's mood? And so that was not in the plan, that intervention, but it couldn't have been a better teaching intervention to show how to use spontaneity, just how much joy it brought. And then I also said, so if we need to have a serious moment, should this be the dog that's in the room right now? And everyone agreed no. So I showed them how I have a place that I can put him when his enthusiasm might be a little more distracting.
Wow. And they also learned the power of solution-focused questions. I think one thing is the change you see when the dog is around or the stories you told us. And the other thing, the importance of asking those questions and exploring, because they cannot take the dog home.
Yes.
So how do you do that?
Well, it's really important when I'm working with a therapy dog that the clients are informed that this is a dog that has had years of training and that you can't go and just pick up your average dog and expect them to act like this. And very, very important, because the last thing I want is dogs to be adopted thinking they're getting a well-behaved dog like mine, and then they eat the slippers and all of these things. And so I oftentimes will explain to my clients, my dogs have eaten drywall. My dogs have eaten carpet. They've done all kinds of things. It takes a lot of work to get to this level. And even then, you know, we spend a lot of time with these dogs. My dogs are rarely home alone. They're either my husband has him in his work, or they're with me with my work, or they're with the dog sitter. It's like having a child when you have a dog that is that well trained. They can't just be put in a crate and left very long. They get bored.
Yeah. And then they start eating slippers.
Yeah. And that's never good.
That also changes the mood.
That very much changes the mood. Then we get to work on our parenting skills, right?
You're listening to the Simply Focused podcast with Elfie Cherney and Dominic Godad, your podcast for a life in joy and ease.
So Terry, what do you do? Because I can imagine, for example, coming into your therapy room and then around your dog and realize all those changes. And then I go out again and there's no dog there. Mm-hmm. And I have to deal with my life and my circumstances. Mm-hmm. So what do you do so that they go out and can use all the things that they have done and they have realized in that moment in their everyday life?
Mm-hmm. Well, so much of solution-focused practice is looking at that preferred future. And so we use those exceptions in the room, see their smile, see their increased mood, and I can say in the future place, how might you be feeling? How might you be interacting, whether you had your own dog or not, or you were home alone? How would you hope to feel? But it broadens their ideas of possibilities because they just experience joy. They just experience laughter. And then they can say, oh, I want to be able to laugh like that. Mm. So in your life, what would make you laugh? That kind of laugh.
Mm-hmm. I really love to create this experiences and with them showing the possibilities. And I think this is such an important part of our work and what we do when we talk with people about their preferred future, that they start to already feel what is possible. And often they also experience that in the moment and even multiplying that with the experience of having a dog in the room. Yeah, this is a very powerful thing to use and to do.
I mean, the most important thing that I see with the exceptions is instead of me asking, has there ever been a time that you felt joy? I see it. And I always say noticing exceptions is far more powerful than asking about exceptions.
And they're right here in this moment, not kind of 5 years ago before this or that happened. It's right there in my life right now. So you create exceptions with your dog. And we also heard that you created many, many exceptions in your trainings. All the people we met that said we were at Terry's training and I really loved it and really learned so much there for our practice. So what do you exactly do in your trainings?
I love training. I've learned a long time ago that I can influence so many more clients by training professionals. And so that's what I spend the majority of my time doing now. And I really love the model that Insu and Steve created. And I see no need to improve on that. And so I work really hard to put my stamp on how I teach. And so I've tried to really help people understand like a skeleton of it, because oftentimes I see that people are asking really good solution-focused questions, but it's almost random. And if I ask, so what let you know you should ask that question? They're like, I don't know. And so I want them to learn how to do it on purpose and to be able to work with the hardest clients. And so that if they want to stay within solution-focused practice, they can. Now, if they want to use other models, they can do that too. But to think of it more of putting on different pairs of shoes, like I can wear my boots and I can take them off and I can put on flip-flops. But I rarely wear a flip-flop and a boot.
Yeah.
Right? So I encourage people to learn to step in and out of the model. And so I try to find ways to teach that help them understand and how this model is very consistent with the laws of physics and why it works, not just the questions, and to think of it more in thirds of a session. You have the first part, the middle third, and the last third. There's so much flexibility on how to do those thirds. But in my experience, if you look at videos of all types of trainers, they always have those thirds, but they all do the thirds a little differently. And if people can understand that, then they can put their own mark on it. After they really understand it.
So how do you support or invite people to understand that? What do you do in your trainings that helps people to understand it, to get it?
Well, I really focus a lot on practice. I think that giving information is important, but it needs to be a balance. You know, I've been in many trainings that at the end I felt like that was a wonderful training, but I don't know what I learned. And I don't want that. I mean, it feels good, but I don't want that. And I've also been in many trainings where I learned a lot, but I don't know how to do it. And I don't want that. So I try really hard to find a wonderful mix about pulling from the participants of what you already know, what works. Tell me about who you work with. Let's build on that. And then my personal style is I like to walk everyone through a full solution-focused session even before I tell them what that is, by telling them the kinds of questions and to practice on themselves. And then after we do that, then I pull out a couple slides and I tell them what I just taught them, so they have the head knowledge to go with the practice. And then I like to break it down. So each skill set, let's learn a little bit more about this, and then let's practice that, and then let's put it all together. So I take people anywhere from a half day introductory class all the way up to full international certification. We have 3 levels of certification. I have people who come here to my Littleton Training Center, and then I get invited to all types of organizations when they want me to go train their staff. And I like to do it all. But I'm also a homebody, so I like it when people come see me as well. So I can spend some time with my family, but I love traveling and working with organizations as well.
And you love solution focus.
I adore solution focus. It is my home because it is where there are no assumptions. No one assumes about me. I don't get to assume about you. And I have to be curious. You can't be curious and think you know at the same time. And that is so refreshing and safe.
Yes.
I love that.
Terry, you mentioned earlier these 3 parts of a session, the beginning, the middle, the end. So what do you want people to know about each of these thirds?
You know, I think it's really helpful if we have sort of a roadmap. Sort of like, I use the analogy of like driving a car. Every time I drive my car, I have the starting up process, I have the driving process, and I have the parking process. Never once have I decided, I don't feel like parking. I'm just going to open the door and tuck and roll. Right? I've never done that. I always do all 3, even if I'm doing just moving the car from one block to the other, or if I'm doing a long distance trip, or if I parked in a snowstorm and I have to dig out my car. I always have all 3, even though they look very different. So in a solution focused session, I always say we have the first part, which is all about what do they want. I have to know what they want. If I don't know what they want, I don't know where I'm going. That's the starting up process. And then I have the second process, which is what do they have? Because I need to build on what they have. So that's where you can do scaling. That's where you can do exception questions, coping questions, so many different kinds of questions. But if I remember, that is what I'm doing, finding out what do they have. The third part is about what's next and really helping them to imagine things were a little bit better and have them to describe it to me and then figure out how did you do that? So it's still going backwards, but gives them hope, gets them to take their bigger vision, but imagine just a little bit further down the road and then to tease it apart, how did I do that? And those are the 3 parts that in every single session, whether it's 5 minutes as a school counselor in the hallway, going from the principal's office to the parent's car, we can do that, or an in-home session that's 2 hours, or in a crisis session. It always has those 3 parts.
So if there is one thing you would love people to get from your trainings, what is this one thing?
Such a hard question.
I know.
That you can't be curious and think you know at the same time. As soon as we think we know, there are no good questions. And when we think we've asked all the questions, that just means we think we know we're done. Not that we've asked all the questions.
This is beautiful. This is very helpful to hear these 3 parts of your training. I've never heard that before, so thank you very much for sharing.
Yes, that's very unique to our training center. And I just find that it really helps take so many good solution-focused questions and helps people organize so they can still be themselves and be flexible, but with structure.
And it shows the assumptions of solution-focused approach. What do they want? What do they have? And where do they go?
What's next?
What's next, yeah. So you've been with Solution Focus for many, many years and developed your trainings, working with your therapy dogs for a long time, and always in a solution-focused way. So if you look back on your journey, your solution-focused journey, and there would be one thing I would say, this was very important for me to learn. This is also something I would like to give to others that are on their journey. What would that be?
You know, when I first started, I was so excited about this model. I was convinced this was the way. Everything else was just wrong. And I became very much of a zealot, and I made some enemies. And it was very important for me to learn that there are many paths. And just because this is right for me doesn't mean that it's right for everybody. And this needs to be a model of attraction rather than promotion. So I've worked very hard in my training center not to be out there shouting from the rooftops, but to be more of a training center that people hear about, word of mouth, and get curious about, and to make sure that there's knowledge of me, but I don't go beating down the doors, because I see what happens. People don't like it when the message is you're wrong and I'm right. And it wasn't until I shifted in my own heart to realize there's many paths. This is mine. And there's room on this path for you, and I'm sure there's room on that path for you. And either way, there's a place. But I think that was really important for me to learn, because this is so life-changing for me.
A very powerful message, yeah. Thank you. Terry, we also have your wonderful books here with us, and would love, before we finish the podcast, to briefly talk with you about these wonderful books. There's this book, Animal Assisted Brief Therapy, A Solution-Focused Approach, which is out in the second edition already.
Yes.
Can you share a little bit about this book?
Yes, that is a wonderful book that really looks at why solution-focused brief therapy and animal-assisted therapy are such a nice parallel. And so it gives a nice summary of solution-focused work, gives a nice summary of animal-assisted therapy. It looks at the research that gives it credibility, but then really takes a look at how to credibly use an animal in this work, because it's more than just taking your dog to work. There's all kinds of legal issues and phobia issues and allergies and all of those kinds of things about keeping an animal safe that addresses, but then also talks about the fun stuff that is at my heart, which is how do we actually form solution-focused interventions to make a difference. It also has sample treatment plans and policies and procedures if you're wanting to bring an animal into your organization. It essentially goes through all the things I did and learned from my mother, and so I could convince an organization. So all of that is in there.
I would love to meet your mother now. So there's another book. It's called Transformation of the Heart. Just the title spoke so much to me. What is this book about?
That actually is a storybook. That was a book that Yvonne Dolan thought about and asked me to write. And it is about the stories of various handlers of therapy dogs and how working with their own therapy dog transformed the handler. So it's not even looking at the clients. It's about the other end of the leash, and has all kinds of just magical stories about these handlers from all over the United States.
I'm very much looking forward to read this one.
And there are also two books about solution-focused brief therapy, one with Yvonne Dolan and the other one, Solution-Focused Substance Abuse Treatment, with Sarah Smock-Jordan.
Yes, I wrote the first one with Yvonne Dolan. She was so kind to take me under her wing when I came up with this idea. I just wanted to write a book, and I'm like, I don't know how to write a book. And so her name was given to me by my good friend Charlie Johnson, and he said, Yvonne is an expert at writing books. And so I contacted her, and she's like, oh, I will help you with the material. And so she took me under her wing for my first book. Everything that was going on in my brain about how to take an agency that was very problem-focused and integrate solution-focused into it. So in there, it talks about treatment plans and evaluations and how to use it in individual, group, and group settings and all kinds of things within an agency, and how to be credible within a very highly regulated agency setting. It also has sample treatment plans and a lot of the documentation, because here in the United States, we are very heavy into our documentation. And in order to stay in business, you have to have problem-focused documentation. So it talks about how to be bilingual so that you can do your work in solution-focused and then translate it into problem-focused so you can get credit for your work. Very important concept. And then the one on substance abuse treatment. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, I was originally trained as a drug and alcohol counselor. And I love that population because they can oftentimes be seen as being very difficult. And as Steve DeShazer used to say, you know, when a client is being what other models would call resistant, in solution focus, we know what they mean is no, you're going the wrong way. And so this book is all about how to view clients who struggle with substances differently so that we can really honor the path that they're on and how to make sure substance abuse treatment in solution focused work is seen as credible. Because here in the United States, it's not seen as credible. So really showing how we can do full evaluations in a solution focused way, how we can do treatment planning, case management, all of that still within the solution focused spirit.
And you find all of the books and many more resources in our resource section. So go to www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast and then go to this episode, episode number 38.
So let's come to the challenge of the week.
May I give two?
Of course.
Okay. So for those of you who have animals, I want you to notice how having an animal in the room or in your life makes you a better human. Now, for those of you who may not have an animal, or maybe you want to do both, I want you to notice when you're using solution-focused practice, what is the purpose of the question that you are asking? Is that purpose of the question about to learn what they want, or about what they have, or about what's next? And just to learn to be purposeful. There's no wrong question, but just to be purposeful.
Thank you so much for this powerful challenge.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for this wonderful conversation.
And of course, as usual, we are very curious how the challenge of the week works for you and what inspired you with this podcast. So please come and comment on www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast and then go to episode number 38. Your voice matters, and what's inspiring, what's important to you might also be important and inspiring for someone else. So please come and share. This might help someone else going their solution-focused journey. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much again for having us here, Thierry. And now we wish everyone a wonderful week, and we go to have dinner.
Yeah, thank you and goodbye.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
This was so fun.
Yeah.
Wow, what a great episode again. Do you also like the Simply Focus podcast? Then help Elfie and Dominic spread the word. Give the Simply Focus podcast a 5-star rating on iTunes, Google Play, and other platforms. Plus, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And share your thoughts and inspirations with others. Comment at www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast. And then go to this episode.